It's a good thing baseballs already have stitches. Because the way these ball players are hitting them... Yeah, they need stitches if they didn't already have them. So the next time you're watching a poor little baseball smacked off the wall in center, keep that little fella in your thoughts. It's hard to be a baseball right now. Baseball is something else. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Yes, sir. Off and rolling. New week Monday. August 26, 2024 is the date. We're putting week zero behind us here in just a moment. Moving on to week one where we have Memphis playing. Everybody's playing. We have a massive Thursday slate. Of course, a massive Saturday slate. And then we'll even have some games coming up on Monday. Florida State will be playing. They're 0-1 in the ACC. And, of course, overall after losing to Georgia Tech in Ireland this weekend. That is something I am going to have to open the show on. My former coach, I think, got schooled. He really did. He got schooled. That's the truth of the matter. But welcome into the Gabe Kuhn Show. I am your host, former Memphis Tiger offensive lineman Gabe Kuhn on @G_Kuhn71. I'm alongside producer Brad Carson. No Connor on today. We'll see when we have Brad. We'll see if Connor can return later in the week. But yeah, we have Brad Carson on @Brad Carson. Brad, how's it going, brother?
It's going incredibly well because, Gabe, we have football.
Yes. Isn't it phenomenal? We get to talk about games.
Yeah.
Talking about games. Yeah. Great
stuff. I'm excited, man.
And we're not far removed. We're going to be very, very close to the NFL season starting with the Chiefs versus the Ravens.
I was looking at the Cowboys schedule because we carry the Cowboys.
Of course, yes, right here at 92.9 ESPN.
That's exactly right. I have to wait 2 weeks for a Cowboys game because their first game is it's against the Browns on the 8th. So I know there's football games in the NFL this weekend. Unless my scheduling is weird, I think Cowboys' first game is the 8th. And by the way, we got CeeDee Lamb signing.
Yeah, we do. We do have that. We're going to talk about that later
All
in
right,
the show.
Stand by.
Yes, but we have 2 hours to talk in the week.
It's courtesy of us.
FM, ESPN, and yours truly. We'll talk about week zero, FSU getting stunned. Tiger football depth chart came out today. Not that many surprises, but I want to break down sort of what I think of what we saw today in that first iteration of the depth chart. I think for Ryan Silverfield, where usually going into a game against an FCS opponent, you see a lot of oars and slashes.
Yes.
Not that many oars or slashes.
No, we know who's going.
I think we understand who's going to be out there for the most part. So we'll talk through that. We're going to have Harold Grader here, bottom half of the hour.
Yep.
Since we don't have that third hour, he'll join at 4:30. Associate Executive Director of the AutoZone Liberty Bowl. We'll talk about everything under the sun that college football has to discuss.
Yeah, I'm excited about Mr. Tony Barnhart going to be out there, so I'm going to join those guys after the show.
Shout out, and he was on the show with Sparky
Friday. Sparky had him on, yeah. He's got a
How
new book
it?
Out, so he'll have that out there, too. He'll sign books if you want to get out there. Tony Barnhart's at the Touchdown Club in a couple hours.
Yep, and then 5 o'clock, David Cobb will join from CBS Sports. We'll talk a bunch of college football. What happened to Florida State? What are they going to look like the rest of the year? Then we'll just sort of preview everything else. We'll talk about the NFL and CeeDee Lamb at 5:30. Then we'll get out with small talk at 5:50. But I have to start with week zero. Before we get into the Georgia Tech Florida State game, SMU struggle win. Sorry for giving that out on the show all last week. I apologize. They struggled their ass off against Nevada. 29-24. They didn't have any answers on the road against the Wolfpack. Wolfpack were feisty. They were ready to play. Preston Stone couldn't make anything happen, but they ended up pulling it out in the end, which you sort of expected them to. But that was way too damn close. And then my biggest shout out of the week, and this is like football guy of the year already in week zero, Montana State getting over top of the Lobos of New Mexico. Lobos of New Mexico were up 17 heading into the fourth quarter, and Montana State ran off 21 straight unanswered points to go win that game.
Totally crapped the bed.
And here's my thing, though. Montana State, you know I'm an O-lineman. I'm a trench guy at heart. If you run the ball like that, you deserve to win a ball game. I don't give a damn. 47 rushes for 362 yards, 3 touchdowns. They had a guy by the name of Adam Jones, 17 carries for 167. A guy by the name of Scott-Trey Humphrey, 19 attempts for 140 yards.
Wow.
Their quarterback, Tommy Mellott, ran for a touchdown and 30 yards. They just pounded the rock. Even when they were down 17 points in the fourth quarter, they said, to hell with it. We're not abandoning this game plan. We're still going to kick their ass. And what did they do? the entire fourth quarter, ran it, created explosive plays, won the ball game. Shout out to Montana State. That's my sicko college football sort of pick of the week.
Well,
fun,
and the Lobos,
fun discussion of the week.
The Lobos gave the game away, too. Let's not forget this.
Yes.
I mean, the turnovers, it was a dreadful closing job by New Mexico.
That's what we expect, though.
Yeah,
it's New Mexico.
Well, and everybody,
that's not a good football program.
Most people thought FBS, the FBS team would be better in the Bobcats from Montana State.
Well, you know what's funny? Montana State didn't even cover. They were 8.5 point.
Were they favorites by that much?
8.5 point favorites. They only won by four,
man.
So they didn't even cover. But I respected the hell out of their grind.
Now I will
beautiful stuff.
This is where the Mountain West will lead you astray when you're talking about Nevada almost winning, and then you know obviously their counterparts over there in New Mexico almost losing or winning. You know,
yeah.
But both of those teams suck.
Yeah, they're not very good. No,
they're terrible.
Nevada was
2-10.
New Mexico was terrible last year.
Their bottom is really bad.
It is really, really terrible.
Yeah.
I can agree with that. Now, I thought also what was terrible was Florida State's performance this weekend. I just have to put a big wolf out there. Georgia Tech upset number 10, Florida State, with an Aiden Burr 44-yard game-winning field goal as time expired. They won 24-21. Now, if y'all listened to me last week, I told you this wasn't going to be surprising if we got into the fourth quarter and Georgia Tech had a chance to go win the game, and I'll tell you why. One, DJ Uiagalelei is not an explosive quarterback. Never has been, seemingly never will be. I know he was a five-star prospect. I know he looked really good. That one game, the Clemson lost 47-40, would have been in 2021 now. I mean, it's way back. Trevor Lawrence goes down. And DJU threw for 400 yards, ran for another 50. He looked phenomenal. He's never been able to recreate that since. And he's had the keys of multiple good programs at this point. Clemson, then he moved on to Oregon State with Jonathan Smith. Now he's at Florida State with Mike Norvell. Still is not an explosive quarterback. In his career, right around 7 yards per attempt. He just gets back to his back foot, tries to let it go, get it out quickly. He's never thrown for 3,000 yards. Most he's ever thrown for, I think, was at Clemson, 2,600 is sort of what we're looking at. So he's never been an explosive quarterback, and it's no surprise that they don't have explosion in that offense right now, and I'll get to that with number two. They don't have any explosive playmakers on the outside. They don't. Look at every good Mike Norvell offense. What did they have on the outside? Great wide receivers. In Memphis, it was Anthony Miller, then DeMonte Coxie, Calvin Austin, Antonio Gibson, Daryl Henderson Jr., Tony Pollard, like all of these guys. Then he gets to Florida State, and what did he have? Keon Coleman and Jordan Travis and Johnny Wilson. This year, who do they have? Tell me right now. Let me know who they have on the outside that scares you.
I can't name it.
Malik Benson is their guy.
Yeah.
They brought him over from Alabama, but this is what he did at Alabama. This is his lifetime achievement at Alabama. 13 receptions, 162 yards, one TD. At Bama,
I mean,
in 1 year.
This Jaquie Douglas guy had 4 receptions for 55. He was their leading receiver.
But Malik Benson is the guy that they tried to sort of hang their hat on, and he's not exactly a proven commodity.
No.
And what are Mike Norvell's teams known for, especially on the offensive side of the ball? Explosive.
Yep.
Explosive plays, explosive playmakers, explosion in general. I saw none of it. Through three quarters, up until that final drive of the game where Florida State came down, and I'll give them credit. They ended up scoring a touchdown, pushing the ball downfield a little bit more. Up until that point in the game, they hadn't completed anything but a now route or an RPO throw. They didn't push the ball downfield. And even on that final drive, Mike Norvell waited till fourth down twice to try to push the ball downfield, give DJU something he could look at. So they don't have explosion. And then also, here's the third part of it, and I've been banging this drum the entire offseason. I knew they were going to be ranked high. They just lost too much last year. They don't have the same team they had a year ago. That's not a surprise. They got a top 10 spot, quite frankly, from pity, from being left out of the college football playoff. But when you look at the guys they lost, Jared Verse, first-round DN, Johnny Wilson, one of the best receivers they've had in the past 5 years to a decade, Keon Coleman, same thing, Trey Benson, was an explosive running back. They don't have anybody back there like him anymore. Braden Fiske, who was one of the most explosive D tackles in the country last year, who got drafted high because of what he did in the combine, he's gone. And then don't forget they don't have Jordan Travis, who could kill you with his legs, kill you with his arm. And Mike Norvell really loved him. And obviously he broke his leg. That's why they didn't get in the college football playoff. But they lost too dang much. They did. That top 10 spot they got was from pity. But why did Georgia Tech win the game? They shortened it. They shortened it. They ran the ball. They abused Florida State on both lines of scrimmage, offensively, defensively, and they won a tight ball game. And I want to give credit to Georgia Tech, Brent Key, that staff. They deserve a ton of credit. They knew how that game was going to play out. They knew what they had versus what Florida State had, and they played it exactly how they needed to. They didn't want to get into an up-and-down game because they don't have an explosive offense like that. They didn't want to make a whole bunch of busts on the defensive side to give Florida State free points. And what they did is just ground the game down to a halt and said, Florida State, if you want to win this game, you're going to have to do it from behind. And they could not do it. And I think also the adjustments they made after that first drive, and I'll say this, Mike Norvell, opening script god, like just, oh my gosh, went straight down the field, scored, gets the two-point conversion. You're like, oh my gosh, this Florida State team, they're going to roll this game. Then after that, they couldn't settle in. But I also thought Georgia Tech had a good opening script. But after that opening script, Georgia Tech backed off their corners, blitzed a whole lot more, and just made life hell for the offensive line for Florida State. On the other side, of all the worries that I've already mentioned about Florida State, here's my biggest, and a little more abstract, so stick with me just a tad bit. I'm not sure that that coaching staff understood what they actually had behind closed doors. Now, bear with me. Listen to what I have to say. Reason I say that. Think about all the propaganda about Florida State we've heard leading into this game, leading into the season. This is the best offensive lineman offensive line Norvell has ever had at Florida State. This defensive line. Pete Thamel said it before the game, Brad. Defensive line. Best in the country. Look at these. Patrick Payton. Bring in Marvin Jones Jr. from Georgia. Best defensive line in the country. The other thing we heard, DJ Uiagalelei. He's ready to take the step. He's going to understand the assignment. He's going to be more explosive. Now, where do those types of things come from? All of the inflated views of Florida State. One, you could say it's just fans being fans. Hope springs eternal. It's before the season. Games haven't been played. They want to have as much hope as possible after last year. In Norvell, we trust, right? But two, and I think this is what I think happened here. I think the staff had a lot of confidence that they were leaking to the media. Media using as a mouthpiece. Look at Pete Thamel. Pete Thamel's not going to go to fans to get the idea of what Florida State's D-line is. But I think they had a little bit more confidence than they should in their situation. And hell, let's on this show, I had Mike Norvell on earlier this offseason. He said a lot of the same things. Said DJ's been a damn pro. He understands this whole thing. This offensive line, experience, really trust them. Our defensive line's going to surprise some folks with how dang good they are. So I think the problem and probably the biggest concern I have about this Florida State team, I think they believed in themselves a tad bit too much. I don't know if they plugged the holes, all the holes they needed this offseason, and that led to what we saw against Georgia Tech. And I'll say this about that team in general. It's not over for their playoff hopes, but it's a miserable start to be 0-1 and 0-1 in conference for a team who felt like they were snubbed by the college football playoff a year ago. Because how quickly we forget about that and move on to this team will prove true in the coming months and weeks. People will start to get all over Florida State if they have a slow start and start to go back to the conversations we had about the college football playoff a year ago, even though it's unfair. They'll go back to it and say, this is the team you wanted to be in the college football playoff. Well, we all know, most of us know at least, not the same team it was a year ago. But I think that's what happens in these conversations. And this team needs to figure it out very quickly. A horrible, horrible start for a team that's top 10 in the AP poll that has college football playoff aspirations.
You know, this is a weird game because In a lot of these teams, you just look at their marquee name and you think a certain thing, right? When you think of Florida State.
Sure.
Alabama. Really, any team. I mean, I was reading an article about Ohio State today from ESPN about how they reloaded through the portal and through how much money they're throwing out with NIL. And now it illuminates something that we all know, which is that the turnover on these rosters is... it's going to be dramatic year to year. Memphis is no exception to that, really. I mean, they've stacked what they already had. But if you look at Alabama, it's a different team. If you look at Florida State, it's a really different team. And even like Georgia Tech stockpiled on at the line of scrimmage. I mean, they're really heavy on both sides of the ball with line play. So I did not expect that, because when you hear Georgia Tech... like, because I heard Saban before the game, and he's like, don't sleep on Georgia Tech. He's like, Georgia Tech.
But Brent Key also is a Sabanite.
I know he was on staff with Saban. But I do think that
he was right.
He was right as hell. And it was like, he also sat in on Mike Norvell's practice.
Yes.
Okay? So he saw what was going to roll out there. And the enthusiasm about Georgia Tech, I thought, felt higher than just Saban going, you know, Georgia Tech's pretty good. It was more like, Georgia Tech can win this game and be in the playoff.
I don't know about all that, but I think
they can make the playoff.
Really, what it came down to in that sense is it felt like Georgia Tech played with as loose as possible, nothing to lose.
Right.
Let's get after these folks that are being crowned before the season. Florida State played tight.
They did.
Game of the year. Georgia Tech's not known as an ACC threat at all.
Yeah.
We can't lose this game, but also if we get up, are they going to roll over? Mm-hmm. You have those questions. It felt like they played a little bit tight early in the season. I'll say this about Mike Norvell. He's not, besides that LSU game last year, not necessarily used to having to get teams up.
Facts.
Immediately to start a season at Memphis, usually an FCS opponent of some sort. That's sort of how it worked for him. He had to get that team motivated to play a team that they're not used to being a threat. But we see this year, they're an absolute threat. They are a scarier team than we gave credit for. And I do have to tip the cap. Shout out to Haynes King. Took him a while to find where he was supposed to go, but I think he's found his forever home, his good home there with Georgia Tech. He's able to use his legs a whole lot.
No interceptions.
He didn't throw any interceptions. There was just that one fumbled snap late in the game, which was a little uncomfortable. I don't know if that was on him or the center timing issue, but he took care of the ball when it mattered the most.
He had 54 yards.
Made it happen.
I mean, the rushing.
Yeah.
Like, he's a runner, too. I mean, he's a weapon. Florida State would like him.
With what I heard, though, about Florida State's offensive line and defensive line, they had no business. I don't care who they're playing.
Right.
Georgia Tech may be improved, right? They're not the best offensive line, defensive line duo in the country.
Right.
It's not how that works.
They're much improved, but they're right.
You can't get your ass whooped on both lines of scrimmage the way Florida State did, and think about the games they're going to have to deal with going forward. You're going to have
Memphis,
Clemson. Memphis is going to be an interesting one we have to talk about. Miami has loaded and stockpiled an offensive line, and Mario Cristobal is an old line coach.
SMU.
Notre Dame is just, they're a first-round offensive line factory. You better beef up. Play a lot harder on both lines of scrimmage if you want to escape this year with less than two losses or three losses. This could get interesting to watch down the stretch of the season. Now, I think for us here in Memphis, thought process watching that game was like, damn, I feel a whole lot better. You start to wiggle. You're like, oh, my gosh.
I feel good.
Start to lick your chops, rub your hands together. You're like, okay, this Memphis team has a shot to go beat Florida State on the road.
Yes.
Now, I will say this. The one thing that will work against Memphis is Florida State's back is directly up against the wall
pissed
for the rest of the year.
Yep.
They can't afford to lose anything else. So they're going to play as hard as humanly possible. They're going to game plan as hard as possible because they want everything that they set out to accomplish to still be accomplished.
Mm-hmm.
That's the one thing working against them.
And but a bye week in front of
when
you.
When we talk about personnel on personnel,
I like it.
After watching Florida State play one game, I feel a whole lot better. Brad, I know we were talking about it off air. You feel a lot better.
I'm riding with the Tigers.
You're riding with the Tigers. Plus, the points are straight up.
Memphis will beat Florida State in a couple of weeks.
Okay.
And I believe it because this is going to sound bananas, what I'm about to say. I think Memphis has a better quarterback. I think Memphis has good line play and they're well coached. We saw it in the bowl game. I don't think that's going to change. They have better personnel. I think Memphis has, in a lot of spots, better personnel. Maybe not higher-ranked personnel, but they're pretty friggin' solid matchup.
So let's talk about the personnel, because the game week depth chart for North Alabama has just been put out as of this morning. They're going to be playing against North Alabama on Saturday in the Liberty Hole. We call it the Liberty Hole.
Yeah, where are we going with that? Half sim? Like, the open bowl?
I'll say this. It's just...
I don't think it
looks
like...
The way they designed it, it doesn't look as bad as I thought it would look.
I thought we'd just see a bunch of rubble.
They've tried to clear out the rubble, and they just cut it in the spot to get rid of that old press box. They have the seats in front that are going to be used.
Clean it up and you keep the people, because you got the safety guardrail now, as long as the people don't fall off and die and you clean it up, it doesn't look like Vietnam on that side anymore. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Like, it looks clean.
But 6 p.m. in the Liberty Hole. We'll call it the Liberty Hole.
And you will be there?
I likely will be there, yes.
Excellent.
Yes, something would have to happen pretty drastic. I don't like to, these days, you know, with a pregnant wife.
Yeah, you got your hands
full. I have to be careful about, like,
this is a fact.
Plans being, like, out in the future. I know that's not that far in the future.
I put you on the spot, but
you get what I'm saying.
I follow.
My plan is to be there.
Fair enough.
But, okay, first thing, because everybody wants to hear my thoughts on the offensive line. Offensive line, let's start there. Across the offensive line, left tackle Chris Adams, who is the Old Dominion transfer, who we were wondering if he's going to break through over a guy like Jalen Nichols, who was going to start at left tackle for South Carolina before he got hurt. He ends up winning the job at left tackle. No or, no slash. 6'5", they list him at 277. I hope he beefs up a little bit more before we get there, but he was great at Old Dominion. He was committed to Washington, believe it or not, before he ended up decommitting, coming to Memphis. Took a week's time. And he started, I believe he started 14 games while at Old Dominion. Xavier Hill up there, he's a starter from last year. He started right around the same amount. Trent Holler from Marshall, who started a bunch of games, he's going to be playing center. Right guard Jonah Gamble, who has been around for a three-year starter basically at this point, besides injuries. He's had some injury issues the past couple of years, but he's the right guard. And Kedrell Lewis came over from San Jose State and UL Monroe, where he started. I tallied up the amount of starts they have across that offensive line, because I think the two big questions heading into the year, defensive backfield, offensive line, what's that going to look like? How does it come together? This offensive line, based on what I've heard from Ryan, from Tim Kramsey, sounds like they're very confident. They have eight guys up there that they're comfortable with rolling out there. They've picked their five, but of those five, 99 FBS starts.
Wow.
99 FBS starts along those five.
That's great.
On the offensive line. That is damn good. Yes, and you have some depth if some of those guys go down, which we know happens game to game as the season goes along. But you have experience.
Yep.
That's huge. Defensive backfield, I was glad to see Davion Ross listed as a starting corner after getting hurt in the Arkansas State game last year. He's a burner. He's one of their best corners on this team. Kobe Miner, transfer from Indiana. I think that's going to be an inflection point for this defense this year. Can you put him on an island, get on, you know, third and five, third and seven, give him a man-to-man assignment into the boundary, and can he win that assignment? It's hard for corners to win that assignment, but we know this is a guy who a year ago went up against Marvin Harrison Jr., who was the, what, fifth overall pick in the 2024 NFL draft? Gave up two catches for 18 yards.
Wow.
So this is the type of guy that I think can really stamp this secondary if he's able to stay healthy and live up to the expectations. And Darius Coffey, finally as a redshirt senior, gets a starting job as safety. A.J. Watts, who I believe is a transfer from Akron and Louisiana Monroe, he gets the starter as a safety. And then they have this new position, Tiger, which is sort of strong safety, I guess.
Way back.
It's strong safety, free safety, slasher, just sort of your extra DB. Greg Rubin. Shout out Greg Rubin from White Station.
Hey.
He takes that spot. As far as surprises, I don't really see many. The one surprise I guess I can throw out there, backup quarterback, I get concerned about if Seth were to go down. Harris Boyd, not a guy we've heard much about.
That's not the freshman?
He is a red shirt freshman. This is not Arrington Maiden.
Who's the dude, the NIL freshman. Kid?
The NIL kid?
The wonder kid. They got the deal.
Are you talking about Antoine Hill?
Yes.
He doesn't get here till next year.
Okay, I'm ahead of myself here. Thank you.
But Harris Boyd.
I think the listeners
6'2", 205, red shirt freshman.
All right.
From Rowlett, Texas, went to Rowlett High School. He is going to be the backup.
He won the backup job.
I want to know what that looks like. And maybe we'll have a chance to see it if this Memphis team can roll out there and beat the hell out of North Alabama.
He started at Iowa State.
Give him
it says.
A little bit of time. Give him I don't. That's
didn't
not,
start a game. He played at.
Okay, played at. I don't know about.
No wait, so, member of the Tigers who defeated Iowa
yes,
State.
Yes, I was going to say.
He redshirted.
This is a redshirt freshman. He's been here.
Okay, yeah, that is concerning.
I want to see what that. Maybe we'll get to see him in that North Alabama game. But I think with any program that has a guy like Seth Hennigan, you should be concerned about that depth to a certain extent. If he goes down, what do you have behind
now, him? Now, Harris makes the jump because of the kid from Memphis that was the backup last year, right? He transferred out.
Yeah, Tevin Carter.
Yep. Yeah, so that's how you end up in that position.
There's right. a guy by the name of Arrington Maiden who's a freshman this year who they think highly of going into the future, but it looks like he needs more development. He's not ready right now. It was his first fall
Hopefully
camp.
We won't need Harris.
Hopefully you won't, but that's something that was not all on right. my bingo card. I can say that.
Well, look, hey, at least you're not Florida State worried about, you know, Brock Glenger back up. We saw what that looked like last year.
Yeah, but
love Brock, by the way.
This linebacking core should be the best in the American Athletic Conference. You're going to have Elijah Herring, who I talked to last week on the show. You're going to have Chandler Martin, who was first team all AAC last year and is thought of very highly, still a junior. And then Matt Hudson, who is the transfer from Harvard, 6'2", 235. He can do some work off the edge as well, from what I understand. So you're going to be really taken care of from the linebacker position. D-line, we'll see how that all works out. I think they're a little bit better, have some bigger bodies on that side, and that's going to be led by Patrick Lucas Jr., 6'2", 320, big run stuffer that came over from Indiana with Kobe Miner and his brother, who's also here. This guy by the name of Javon Dennis, who's kind of smallish, but he comes over from Georgia State. He was their most productive D lineman last year, but he is 5'11", 275 pounds. I did get to see sort of Ryan Silverfield's, quote, about Javon Dennis, and he basically said he's not the biggest guy in the world, doesn't have the longest arms, but man, can he play. Man, can he play. So
that's what they said about you, Gabe.
Yeah. I was a little bigger than 5'11", 276.
Yeah, I mean, you weren't that short.
Yeah. 5'11", 276 is a little smallish for what I was. But he'll be one of the DNs. The other DN will be William Whitlow Jr., who we're very familiar with. All said and done, not too many surprises. But
where are you at on your prognostications?
You look at the quarterback position, that backup, and you look at that O-line to see who won some of these battles. And I honestly feel a lot better about the offensive line, quarterback position, little bit down if Seth goes down. But I think that's goes for any program who has a quarterback like Seth Hennigan. If they go down, you have to adjust expectations no matter what.
All right, so prediction here.
Go. Yeah. Hit me.
Now, what your prediction?
My prediction
Florida
for this,
State.
For Florida State?
Yeah, after you laid out every single player on this roster.
I'm going to go with a close loss right now.
Damn you.
We'll see what they look like against Boston College.
Dan Coon, how am I a bigger believer than you are?
It's on the road. On the road, they're going to be hyped up for that game. 11 a.m. on ESPN. And they know that they have to get things done. They know that that loss against Georgia Tech has eliminated any bit of wiggle room they had. Mm-hmm. And with that, they're going to play a lot differently. And I also think the bye week after that Labor Day game against Boston College is very helpful for them. Again, I'm not going to be surprised if Memphis goes in there and wins, but I think close loss is probably what I'm looking at right this second. As far as my win total for the year, I have the Tigers right around 10-2. I'm going to give them a little bit of wiggle room and one of those road games to lose. I still think that could get them into the AAC championship, but I have Florida State and then one of those road games. You pick it. South Florida, Tulane, UTSA. That's one of those games I think could be chalked down as a loss, but we'll see how it all looks by the time we get there.
Okay.
By the time we get there. But all said and done, I think it's going to be a good year, and I like to see them get this depth chart out immediately, and not a lot of oars. The only oar of note would be Sutton Smith and Mario Anderson Jr. at the running back position.
Mm-hmm.
But I'd imagine you have both those guys on the field at some points, too, because Sutton Smith can split out into the to the slot, catch some passes. Mario Anderson Jr. can get in between the tackles. You have different skill sets. You can play around with sets, mess with the defense using those two running backs. But we'll see how it all goes. Game will be on Saturday in the Liberty Hole at 6 p.m. against North Alabama. Now, to talk about Week 0, review this Florida State loss, and talk about the big games we have coming up in Week 1, we need to bring on a man, a myth, a legend by the name of Harold Grader. He's the Associate Executive Director of the AutoZone Liberty Bowl And he joins the Gabe Kuhn Show next.
Yes.
It's a good thing baseballs already have stitches. Because the way these ball players are hitting them. Yeah. Yeah, they'd need stitches if they didn't already have them. So the next time you're watching a poor little baseball smacked off the wall in center, keep that little fella in your thoughts. It's hard to be a baseball right now. Baseball is something else. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Appear on the Smile Center Hotline. Now back to the Gabe Kuhn Show on 92.9 FM ESPN.
Back in and rolling, Gabe Kuhn Show, 92.9 FM ESPN. And joining me, as is customary, every single Monday, Harold Grader, the Associate Executive Director of the AutoZone Liberty Bowl on X at Harold Grader. Harold, how was your weekend?
Great weekend, Gabe. We had live college football, made a little trip down to Alabama. I am rare to go The official week number one in college football.
So Alabama, you did the little Tuscaloosa action, yeah. Birmingham. You were everywhere,
little across the state.
Okay,
yeah, you know, dipped into the Waysider restaurant Sunday morning.
Nice.
There's a dedicated. It was Coach Bryant's personal booth there in the Wayside, one of the legendary restaurants in Tuscaloosa. Great breakfast, kind of set the tone for the day on Sunday.
You got to sit in the booth?
Okay.
Dang. It's VIP treatment there in the state of Alabama.
It happened to be open.
I hear you.
No special treatment for this guy from Memphis, but right there by the front door, food's great. A lot of history there.
Yep.
So, fun.
Yeah, I passed through Birmingham this weekend. I was off in Destin, Miramar Beach area, that type of deal. I loved being. We were at our restaurant and pool down at the edge of our resort or whatever you want to call it. There's a bunch of condos and houses and everything else. We were in a rental property.
Yeah. I'm going to guess there might have been some Florida State people in that pool with
you. A bunch of Florida State people while we're sitting in the pool. They were not happy this weekend, and I get why.
I bet not.
24-21, they lose in Dublin on a 44-yard, you know, kick as time expired. And Georgia Tech set the tone in the trenches. I thought they did a good job defensively of not letting Florida State, you know, get – you know, the run game going consistently. DJU couldn't push the ball downfield. Yeah. It doesn't seem like they have the weapons on the outside. It seems like there's a lot of things that went wrong that led to that loss. But in your estimation, what's the biggest thing that jumped off the screen to you why they lost that game?
From a Florida State perspective, I would say the quarterback play. They never gotten to any rhythm. Of course, that was because of the great job that Georgia Tech was doing.
True.
So, obviously, a punch to the gut for Florida State. But everything they want to play for is still there. But you look down the road at their schedule. and Gabe, I know we're going to talk about the Tigers and Florida State. But, you know, I feel a whole lot better today than I did on Saturday going into that game about the Tigers' chances when they go down to Tallahassee in here in a couple of weeks. But looking down the road for FSU, they've got Clemson, Miami, Notre Dame. So three huge games down the stretch later in the year for them. So everything Florida State aspires to achieve is still there. Conference championship, national championship opportunity, it's still there. But I got to tell you, Gabe.
I don't have much of confidence they're going to be able to get there, though.
Lots of room for improvement, to say the least.
Yes.
And especially at the quarterback play, because if you don't have the quarterback, nothing else is going to matter. And I have so much confidence in Mike Norvell to handle quarterbacks and manage an offense. So we always say teams make the most improvement from week one to week two. We'll see. That they have some extra time because of the trip to Ireland, because they won't play again until Labor Day night. I want to say it's Labor Day night against Boston College. So we'll see what Florida State does, but not an impressive performance. But again, kudos to Georgia Tech. Huge win for them.
Huge for Brent Key and what that program can build to and aspire to. I thought Haynes King was great that game. Didn't turn the ball over. Ran the ball hard. He looked comfortable out there, but he should be at this point. I think he's a senior at this point, but he looked really good. But the one thing that keeps me back from Florida State and thinking that they can accomplish the things that are still out there for them to accomplish, I know there's some people that can chalk it up and say, well, they went over to Ireland, weird situation, uncomfortable. Georgia Tech's better than we think right now. They probably should be a top 25 team. Some people chalk it up to that. I just look at it, and I think there's one, like, overarching issue. They don't have the explosive playmakers that Mike Norvell has had just about every good year of his coaching career. Yeah, DJU is not an explosive quarterback by any stretch of the imagination. He's shown that at three different stops now. Malik Benson on the outside is probably their guy at wide receiver. At Alabama, he was a guy who just sort of blended in with the crowd, and he was, what, an 160-yard receiver last year for Alabama. They just don't – their running backs are good, but their O-line kind of got pushed back. It just doesn't seem like they have the explosive playmakers that Mike is used to having.
So a great look in at Florida State as we look down the road to that Tiger game in Tallahassee. And is this the roadmap for the Tigers to follow? Now, you still have to go in there and do what you do and do what
right.
you do best. But – for those Tiger coaches who I'm sure they all were watching, and as they get ready for Florida State, of course, you can't look past the first two for the Tigers before you get to
right.
Tallahassee, but there is tape now to look at it, this current Florida State team and say, okay, we might be able to exploit some of this ourselves. So we'll see what Florida State does against BC and see if they have made some improvement from week one to week two.
I think if Memphis was going to use this game plan to a certain extent, you would say that they're gettable. Going straight at that defensive line that was tabbed by Pete Thamel before the game, one of the best in the country, if not the best in the country, they're gettable in the run game. You can get after them. You can drive them off the ball, make them uncomfortable.
Yeah.
And then the offensive line that was supposed to be pretty dang good, sort of a strong suit of that team. You can press them and get after them a little bit. I don't know if Memphis has the same ability that Georgia Tech has to shorten a game
right.
and just run the ball against an ACC team. But we'll see. I mean, I think it's going to be interesting to watch what they take from Georgia Tech that Georgia Tech had success with and bring to their game plan.
Yes. Again, that's why I say you still have to do what you do.
Right.
You can't totally change your personality.
Sure.
And again, for the Tigers, that starts with Seth Hennigan on the offensive side.
Yes. But you feel a lot better about that game.
Oh,
ultimately.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Being down there.
I did kind of want to see Florida State keep that ranking high, though.
I did.
I will say that.
Absolutely.
I don't think it ruins the game by any stretch of the imagination, but I wanted to see that be a potential top 10 team.
Yeah.
Tigers go in and have a chance to knock them off. That would have been very, very fun. But we have some massive matchups coming up this week. And it's really the triple header. You're going to have UGA Clemson, A&M Notre Dame, Miami and Florida. What game are you watching the closest? Is it going to be that Georgia-Clemson game for sort of the first chance we get to see a national champion contender, probably the favorite to win the national champion against a really good team?
Yeah, I'd say the Georgia-Clemson game and also A&M and Notre Dame.
Okay.
Miami-Florida comes in third for me on that list. Georgia, lots of NFL future draft picks on that team. They have Carson Beck at quarterback. I think they just keep rolling. The intriguing part for me is Clemson. Can they compete? Can they get this thing trending in a positive way? Because, you know, obviously a lot of chirping going on about Dabo's situation there, not living up to expectations. That, to me, is intriguing.
Yep.
You know, can Clemson keep it a game? Of course, this is the Peach Bowl kickoff game.
Yep.
So the game is in Atlanta, so a quote-unquote home game, but Clemson isn't that far away. But intriguing to me is to see what Clemson does. How competitive are they? Again, the line, are they a pretender or a contender? And, you know, we'll get a read on them, but Georgia's going to win the game.
Yeah. Now, I've been asked this question by you, and I want to flip it around and ask you. You asked me the question on several occasions. You did at the Memphis Touchdown Club when I was part of the Spring Speaker Series, the whole thing.
Yeah.
You said, can a team like Clemson win without attacking the portal like a lot of the people around them are. And I said no. And I think the guy next to me, it was Tyler Siski,
yeah.
He said yes. He said, because you see the top of the sport, Georgia, Alabama, they still get a lot out of the high school ranks, and they grow those guys up, they develop them. But I'm going to turn that around on you. With the lack of just any portal additions for Clemson, do you think that he can still win at the highest of levels? And I'm talking national championship. I'm not talking, okay, get to a New Year's Six bowl game, win 10 games. But that was a program that won two national championships in a short period of time. Can they get back to that point not getting transfer portal guys?
It's been a minute or two or three
right, for
Clemson. For Georgia, to that point, when you are the obvious elite program in the country, number one, it's easy to recruit.
Mm-hmm.
And you can get those
sure,
elite high school players.
And they, but they Clemson, do hit the portal, too, Georgia,
oh,
a little
absolutely,
bit. They still get guys
absolutely,
out of the portal.
Clemson, because the question was,
can you win at a high level?
Clemson win and not go to the portal? I think it's a situation where you fill specific needs. Hey, we need a this, we need a that. Go to the portal to get those experienced players that can fill those specific holes. We'll see. And I think this year could be that fork in the road for Clemson.
Yep.
Do they figure it out, get back to winning at a high, high level or not? I don't think Dabo's job is on the line, but the trend, I think, can be set for the future by what happens this year there at Clemson.
Yeah, I'm very, very curious to see how that all plays out. We haven't seen much from Cade Klubnik, so he's going to have to show something this year.
Yes.
They lose Shipley, they're running back, and I guess they have Phil Maffa is still there. They're going to be a pretty run-heavy offense, I'd imagine, still, for the most part. They don't really have guys on the outside. It's going to be very, very I think it's an inflection point year for them.
Because
here's the thing about Dabo. I don't think that highly of Dabo at this particular moment, because I think he's let some things engulf his program. He has not latched on to NIL. He hadn't done the portal thing. But at the end of the day, he's still, I mean, that team's still probably going to win 10 games, 9-10 games at the very least. Like, as much as we sort of get on to him, I still feel like the guy does win a lot of ball games.
He does.
There are worse managed programs than his, even though from the outside looking in with the new age of college athletics and college football, we think it's pretty poorly managed.
That's true, Gabe, but still the expectation is compete for a national championship. Winning 9-10 games, that's great.
Right.
But it's almost like basketball. You know, the regular season's great. Postseason conference tournament's great. But what do you do at tournament time?
Right.
And now that's the yardstick.
It's funny.
Are you in the hunt, a legitimate contender for the national championship in the new playoff?
Right. Isn't it funny, though? He's the one who created all those expectations.
Yeah.
He's the guy.
Hey.
There's nobody else in that Clemson. I mean, that coach that Clemson program that ever created national championship aspirations. I remember it was Clemsoning for a while, right?
Yep.
You screw up, give up a game in the fourth, lose your chance to go win a national championship. That's what Clemson did for a long, long time. Dabo created these expectations. Now he has to live up to them. And I think he's a little bit uncomfortable with that. Now, moving on. I want to get to another coach that's a little uncomfortable. I get the sense he's a little uncomfortable. But he does invite cameras behind the scenes all the time. But he has recently told a reporter that they cannot show up they can show up, but they can't ask questions to him or any players. Coach Prime banned Denver Post columnist Sean Keeler from speaking to the media because of what he calls, like, repeated low blows of some sort. What do you make of all this from Dion before the season? Seems like an insane distraction and just unnecessary. And I think there's been a lot of examples of him having run-ins with the media that are just unnecessary altogether.
Yeah, Gabe, you know, sometimes with Coach Prime, and I was rowing the boat with everybody a year ago. I thought, fresh start for him, taking that move from Jackson State to Colorado. There was a lot of excitement, renewed enthusiasm. They were winning at the first of the year last year, fresh and new. I thought it was great.
Yeah.
now it seems as if that the show, meaning himself, seems to be more important than ball. And you got to keep the main thing, and that's coaching and winning. And to start the season before you've ever put toe to ball for the very first time this year, you got all this stuff rumbling around your program. Personally, I just think it's unnecessary. You know, you don't like the guy, the writer, don't call on him. Don't call him. But, all this stuff.
All the theater around it, right?
You know, in my world, that's just unnecessary. But I think he thrives on stuff like that. He stirs the pot. People are talking about him. I think that's what he wants. But at the end of the day, he's a football coach. And ultimately, he's going to be judged on winning and losing football games. So we'll see. And coming straight out of the box, they're home.
Yeah.
But
it's North Dakota State.
It is North Dakota State. So it's not, a walk through the park. That's Thursday, right? Thursday night.
ESPN.
I'm looking forward to that one.
The one thing that always I come back to is there have been coaches in the past that have, maybe even gotten columnists fired from their job, or, they have banned them from talking. Like, we've seen things like this before. But I get the sense, I look at some of Sean Keeler's work and some of the words he used. He used, false prophet and things like that. You got to understand that the amount of criticism that you're getting, you're a 4-8 football coach in the end of the day, and you invite all these cameras behind the scenes. I don't think he has the understanding that he invites a lot of this stuff to himself, to his front door, when he's so open about everything that goes on within that program. When he tells people to hit the road, when they're in the first team meeting, you're not going to play here. Yeah. He opens himself up for these kinds of things, and then on the back end, he wants to ban reporters from talking.
Yeah, and again, this isn't the first time here. The last 2 weeks he had the dust up with the local CBS guy.
Poor guy, that wasn't even his fault. He has nothing to do with CBS Sports.
Yeah,
he has nothing to do with it.
Deion's rub is with the national guys, and he's taking it out on the local CBS affiliate in Denver. The guy's just trying to do his job.
Yeah.
And remember, what is one of the main jobs of the local media? What are they doing? They are the conduit to your local fans.
Yeah.
And here's Prime cutting off one of his TV guys. They're in the Denver area. I mean, come on.
Yeah.
Anyway, keep the main thing. Go win some ball games.
And that starts with North Dakota State. They're only 10-point favorites. It's not big. I think Colorado should be better this year. Dallin Hayden.
Yes.
We have Dallin Hayden over there.
Yes, they do.
I think that's going to be fun to watch. Travis Hunter's still back. You still have Jimmy Horn, guys on the outside. Shador Sanders, really good quarterback. But what are the questions about them? On the field. I'm not talking about off the field like we were just talking about. Offensive line, defensive line. You're going to be able to compete. Deion. Looking back at last year, I don't think it's a massive surprise that their offensive line and defensive line lag behind, because that's not something that Prime has ever been used to recruiting or coaching or having right all the time. It's just sort of a given. Let's worry about these skill guys. But this offseason, he's tried to focus on D-line and offensive line. They have to be better if that team wants to make a bowl game.
Absolutely. That's simply put. You don't compete on the line, either side, forget about it.
Yeah, and Shador Sanders just got, he had his son back there getting killed every game, even in the games they won. I remember that Nebraska game. He got sacked, 5-6 times? It was nuts. He had to make up for a lot, which I think pretty highly of him at the next level. But that's a conversation for another day. Talking with Harold Grady, the Associate Executive Director of the AutoZone Liberty Bowl. Last couple of things for you. UConn, over the weekend, we got some news, some reports out there that UConn could be headed to the Big 12. Now, the idea of this is Brett Yormark wanting to expand the basketball brand, first and foremost. They'd be in for basketball in 2026, and they would be in for football by 2031.
Correct.
Very interesting way to go about things. But I will say this about Brett Yormark. I don't know if he's had a misstep yet. So when it comes to his decision making, I have a little bit of trouble going after him. I have a little bit of trouble questioning fully his intentions and his thoughts going forward in the new college athletics, because he has managed it really well to this point.
He has, and kudos to him. So a couple of points, Gabe. Number one, think back to the very first press conference when he said, we're open for business.
Yep.
And that means from his world where he's coming from, entertainment, NBA, NASCAR, to now running one of the top conferences in college athletics, he's going to look at anything and everything that would improve his product, improve the brand. He's going to kick the tires on just about anything. And I think that's what this is. It may lead to something. We'll see. But just keep that in mind. I mean, he's going to talk. He's going to look. He's going to explore opportunities. Also, he's a Northeast guy. He's a New York guy. And what is the biggest college sports brand in the Northeast? UConn.
Yeah.
UConn.
It's up there.
So can't blame him for looking in that direction. You know, this last iteration of expansion, he went west.
Yep.
With the four corner schools. Mission accomplished. Now he's looking at what's down the road. So he's looking back east. Media value, improves their TV package, more dollars. Possibly how can we do that? UConn, the biggest brand in the Northeast. Brings a lot of TV sets, a lot of eyeballs, value. So we'll see, but not surprised by that.
What he does, though, is he is doing something that we sort of have, you know, raised our nose up at in the past. It's basketball first. It's a basketball first move.
Yep.
Where we would usually say, well, football's the one that generates all the revenue. Football, we make these moves for football. That's why these
moves
are made.
Yeah.
But he's going the basketball route, trying to strengthen the Big 12's hold as the best basketball conference in the country. And I would usually sort of poo-poo this idea. But considering it's UConn, reigning two-time last two national championships, I mean, that's a busy, when we're talking about basketball brands, that's about as big and good a basketball brand as you could possibly get. One of the blue bloods in the country.
Will be interesting to follow that.
Yeah. Brett Yormark, though, he's definitely succeeded where a lot of guys have failed in this new day. He is as aggressive and he's a great strategist. I'm impressed with him. I'm very impressed
absolutely.
With him. Absolutely. Yeah.
We're glad to be partners with him.
Yeah, that's right. I was waiting for that. And again, we've talked about it in the past. More schools potentially on the way that could participate in the AutoZone Liberty Bowl. That'll be nice.
Well, we'll see. And again, Tiger fans may not be happy to hear that, but the Tigers will have their own opportunities. Maybe not in the Big 12. We'll see. But maybe somewhere else down the road. But Tiger fans, keep the faith, keep building, keep supporting, and win.
Yeah, and go watch them play North Alabama this
weekend. Absolutely.
6 p.m.
Yep.
Simmons Bank Liberty Stadium.
Looking forward to
being
there.
And get your tickets now. Get your tickets. Remember, limited capacity. If you're just hearing my voice right now, limited capacity in there. Get your tickets and then try to buy them up real quickly. But, Harold, I appreciate the heck out of it, man. It's always fun on a Monday to talk with Harold Grader, the Associate Executive Director of the AutoZone Liberty Bowl. Now, we need to go ahead and grab a break. And when we come back, David Cobb will join the program. We'll review Week 0, talk about Florida State getting upset in Ireland, and then we'll get to Week 1. We have a lot of games to get to right here on the other side, 92.9 FM ESPN.
Trying to figure out what to eat for dinner yet again? With Norse sides and bouillon as your not-so-secret ingredient, you can skip the drive-thru and do dinner at home. Nor Taste Combos provide a menu of delicious, affordable, and well-balanced meals that you can prepare in 30 minutes or less. Visit nor.com to get quick and easy recipe ideas for your home-cooked weeknight dinners. It's not fast food, but it's so good.
For the first time, U.S. subscribers can stream MLB Network 24/7, including select out-of-market games.
Swing and a drive. It's deep. It's good. Yes!
Stream minor league affiliates.
Home run number one.
Horse rat pick number
number one.
Plus, get MLB Big Inning and live audio for all 30 teams.
Baseball can't get better than this.
Experience the game like never before with MLB Network and At-Bat, your all-in-one baseball destination. Only $6.99 per month. Visit MLB.com/At-Bat for details. Blackout and other restrictions apply. MLB trademarks used with permission.